Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell, and I would really just like, if we could, to not have any more, like, major U.S. news stories, like, break before we hit the airwaves on Monday. Like, that'd be great.
Have a nice, boring weekend. I was driving by, and I saw a truck with a bunch of Let's Go Brandon flags on sale. Like, they're just practically giving them away now.
Right. It's almost like something happened that may have made that whole ridiculous thing outdated or something. Yeah, apparently, officially, as of yesterday, come January, the president will not be the guy who currently is president in, any situation.
Yep. Second time, Nixon, he resigned in the middle of his term. Biden was just basically, more like LBJ. He will not seek another term. He's out. And, right, and and this is coming from a guy, I'm a self-proclaimed Democrat. I think this was the right move. I mean, Biden was just showing signs that he just didn't have the mental capacity for the job. And
you know you're going to absolutely get hammered for if you stay in the race at that point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, just get decimated.
Like, which is funny, as the 78-year-old guy goes after the 80-year-old guy, oh, you're too old to handle the job.
Yeah, right.
Well, certainly not going to have to have that be the case anymore. Would you look at who's the old guy in the election now?
Well, look who's the old guy now. Yeah, I find it odd that, Kamala Harris is definitely going to be the front runner. Really? Aren't we supposed to have, like, primaries? Aren't we supposed to be able to vote?
Well, the primaries came and passed already. And he didn't step down until after the primary process happened, because I think technically we've already voted in our state's primary. Like, that's all done with.
Really?
Back when no one was running against Biden because, something incumbent. Yada yada, he incumbent, no one's going to challenge the incumbent. I mean, yeah. They should have. But
right.
Yeah, so now, like, it's basically being set up to hand it to her. I'm actually a little bit surprised, truth be told,
yeah,
that he didn't just step down entirely and just make her the president effective immediately.
I would like to have seen that just to see what she can do. I have little to no knowledge of this woman, and she's the first female president. She's black, and she's breaking a lot of ground there. But she has been non-existent this entire presidency.
Yeah, but I feel like the majority of your presidents, your vice presidents, aren't usually, unless they do or say something incredibly stupid, you don't traditionally hear a lot from them. Like I said, the only time we heard from really Biden during Obama's term was when it was for something ridiculous.
He's cussing in a hot mic. Swearing into a hot mic, didn't realize it. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I guess, but I don't know. I guess I just need to do my research. I guess that's on me, but... here we are.
Yeah, so. I doubt you're going to be given any kind of an option. I mean, you're not going to be given any kind of an option because it's all going to be determined at the convention in Chicago. Like, that's how that's going to work. That's, one more politician's getting around and, letting the little people know that they don't make a difference kind of thing.
Yeah, why do I have the feeling like the next 10 presidential candidates are already been selected?
Yeah, wouldn't entirely surprise me at the next 10, but...
I still have a problem with a couple years ago when a lot of people wanted Bernie Sanders. And they're like, no, it's going to be Hillary. But we don't like Hillary.
Yeah, you're basically just kind of told to shut up and let it happen.
Right.
And, how did that work out for you?
And she got whooped.
Like, yeah, it seemed like that's kind of how it was going to go this time around. Like, you're just being told, like, this is how it's going to be. You're just going to accept it. This is who we've decided. He's getting another crack at this, even despite everything that we know. And until he suddenly wasn't. But it was kind of setting up for that again. Like, do you really want to do this again? We've seen how that works out.
Uh-huh. I mean, I don't think he's going to be with us in 4 years. Within 4 years. Because, I mean, they're saying that he's got Parkinson's. You know, there's a lot of things that they're not telling us, but we're hearing whispers that, he's got Parkinson's, he's got this, he's got that, he's losing control of his mind. I mean, and he's showing signs of it. I mean, he introduced the president of Ukraine as Putin.
Yeah, ought not be doing that. Yeah, not recommended. That's
probably not. Probably shouldn't be doing that. No.
Right. He was already a gaffe machine for years, but I mean,
yeah.
It's gotten like so much worse, so much more noticeable. I mean, and it's going. That's going to be the case when you're officially the leader of the free world. Spotlight's on you, like bigger than any other job you can hold in this world.
Yeah.
That's just kind of how that goes. Like you kind of, like you're going to be under more scrutiny than any single individual on the face of the earth, whether it's actually gotten actively worse in his time in office, or whether it's just now it's being pointed out more because of the position he holds. I can't say for sure.
I just really want a boring president, just a nice boring person, male or female, I don't care. Just somebody who, you know, is not going to try to rock the whole boat, not who's going to make a bunch of stupid flub ups in the on camera and stuff like that. I want SNL to have a bad time. Okay, I want Saturday Night Live to have a really rough time with the next president. It's just a real boring president. We're like, man, we can't have any cold openings for our show because he's just so boring. That's what I want. Do the job. Let's not make any headlines. Let's just run the country, okay, pal?
That'd be fine. I'd be entirely good with that, and I feel like most of the country at this point would be entirely good with that. I like that, by the way, as a as an indicator and a presidential candidate. How hard would it be for SNL to make fun of this guy?
Right. I mean, Maya Rudolph would have to come back to SNL if Kamala Harris is president, right?
I mean, there's no other way around that, I wouldn't think.
No. Can't think of anybody else who could play her.
Who would do her any kind of justice.
Right. But, yeah, I still don't know anything about Kamala Harris, except for, you know, the fact that she's a woman. She's African-American.
She was a senator before she was on VP.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's the boring president I want. She's not, you know, making any stupid speeches. She's not trying to rock the boat. She's maybe I'm getting what I want.
Yeah, you could very well be. I suppose that's an entirely reasonable possibility. Like you, I mean, she's got enough of a track record as a, like I said, senator before the vice presidency,
yep.
The attorney general in California for a term or two. Like,
yep.
Like there is a history in that sense, but you know, that's quite frankly, all of that is for shows that aren't this one, who actually really obsessively get into these things to get into, because that's not our tactic. We're just here mostly to react and make jokes to the things that do happen.
Yep.
If you're coming to us to get your political, you know, to find out what to think for the day, unless it's about the Tigers, you probably shouldn't be coming to this show for that.
Right.
And we will get to that coming up here, I think, on the other side of the break, because we are once again faced with kind of a burning question of sorts. As we approach the trade deadline next week, next Tuesday, I believe. So we've got one issue I do have to bring up with that, and then we'll kind of have some fun from there. Either way, stick around. It is happy hour. We'll be back right after this. Well, I promised Tiger Talk, and we have gotten to the point of the season where, well, we're about 8 days away from the trade deadline. You've won two of your three games since the end of the All-Star break, taking two out of three against the Blue Jays over the weekend. And it's being discussed very, very strongly. There's been a lot of talk of the possibility, and it's really kind of heating up, that Tarek Skubal is going to end up being traded. And there's been discussions apparently had per Bob Nightingale at USA Today. The Orioles and Dodgers are engaged in talks with the Tigers regarding a trade for the All-Star left-hander. This comes after a previous report from Tom Verducci at Sports Illustrated, which suggested that the O's and the Dodgers were interested in Skubal, but did not confirm the Tigers were entertaining offers for the Cy Young contender. It sounds like both teams are looking to add starting pitching ahead of the July 30th deadline. Mike Elias had expressed interest, he being the GM of the Orioles, in adding a starter with multiple years of club control. Meanwhile, the Dodgers have made an offer to the White Sox for Garrett Crochet, and Elden Gonzalez of ESPN suggests that adding a front-of-the-rotation starter remains their top priority. It seems like they're very much in the Crochet sweepstakes more than anything, but Baltimore seems to be the big team that is after the that is after Tarek Skubal. And I guess question is now there is some interesting things here. Detroit, according to Nightingale, will only move Skubal if the front office is overwhelmed by an offer. Gonzalez reports that sources familiar with the Tigers' thinking believe a trade is unlikely. Verducci's source offered similar information, though added that everything has a price. And there is certainly a lot of prospects that the Dodgers, not the Dodgers, the well, the that the O's certainly have that they could give up, but it's a question of whether or not they are going to be willing to give up some of those guys. We'll get to that part in a minute. There's also the, you got to kind of look at the current situation of the Tigers as a whole. They are 2 games under 500, but it certainly doesn't look like that team is going to be making, I mean, they're not making a run this season. They're not making a chase for the pennant. I think they're even too far gone at this point out of the wild card to really realistically contend. When you look at those standings right now, Detroit is 6 games out of the wild card race. They're 11 games out of the AL Central. You have Reese Olson, who was the other really nice piece in your rotation. He's now going to be missing they're saying a significant amount of time. Like, I don't think this is going to be just 2 times through the rotation. He, from the sounds of things, is going to be gone for a while.
Ouch.
And that really hurts, because despite the fact that he's had issues of getting his team to give him any run support, he's been the best pitcher on this team, not named Skubal. You kind of got to expect at this point that Jack Flaherty is going to be made available on the trade market, certainly. I expect him to be gone before next Tuesday. And unless something happens where he is all of a sudden extended, which I'd be fine with. If that were to happen, I would be entirely good with this, and don't let me, you know, convince you otherwise. I would be entirely fine if that ends up being the case. But I don't see it happening. It doesn't sound like there's even been an offer made at this point, so you gotta believe they're gonna let him walk. As far as trading Skubal, though, I have, at bare minimum, to entertain the idea of giving up Skubal in his prime right now, I need Jackson Holliday from the Orioles. He's their upcoming middle infield prospect. He plays both second and short. And I need Kobe Mayo, who plays both the corner infield positions. I need both of those, plus probably someone else thrown in, if I'm even listening. And if you tell me Holliday's off the table, I'm hanging up the phone on you immediately. Because if you're going to give up an all-star pitcher in his prime, then I better be getting some pieces that are absolutely going to come up and finally give this team some desperately needed offense. Like, the Tigers have shown such an inability to give and develop major league hitting. We've seen this so much over the years. Like, that, always the next guy who gets called up, I mean, obviously, Torque has thus far bombed out. Daz Cameron was the last big one. I've heard about so many of these guys who were supposed to be the next big hitter on this team. Well, Colt Keith is supposed to be, you know, great. And, well, thus far, he certainly improved, but a 250 hitter is not also the what I'm thinking of the future of my franchise. I'm sorry. Like, maybe Justin Henry Molloy, right now he's hitting a paltry 218. In this rough, like, so many guys have been told they're going to be the next big thing for this team, rarely pan out. Like, who's the last hitter? You can make an argument for Riley Green currently, certainly. But other than that, who's the last big minor league Tigers hitter that panned out? Nick Castellanos?
You'd have to go way back for that one.
Yeah, I think that's how far you have to go back, and arguably, what, Granderson before that? Like, this team just doesn't do that. They don't seem to develop. Like, pitching, they always have a surplus of pitching. Give this team credit, and give Chris Fetter credit too, because he can, like, they identify the talent that's out there that can be fixed, and he can fix them. Like, if there's one thing this team has consistently been able to do, it's develop pitching and identify guys who are having down years and get them back to their get them back to form, really. But the offense, that hasn't been the case. So if you can get me two guys who are going to be, like, impact guys in a few years. Guys, okay, maybe they're in single A right now. Like Jackson Holliday, currently, he actually played about 10 games for Baltimore this season. And that admittedly hasn't gone well, but that's his first ever major league experience. He's hitting to the tune of 281 in Norfolk, and it looks like that's where the Tigers have been scouting recently. Like Tiger scouts have been seen at the Norfolk Tide games lately, and it seems like that's a guy they're interested. Cody Mayo seems to be one of those, and he has seen time at AAA this season as well, and he's hitting close to 300 down there. At the AAA level for his career, hit a robust 284, which is better than a lot of guys who are currently on your roster right now, or certainly better than a lot of your guys in Toledo currently. Like, I could be fine if those two guys are included. All right, I am absolutely interested. If Samuel Basayo, I mean, he's certainly an option too. He's the 10th rated prospect in all of baseball. He's a catcher, and he's currently hitting 273 in the Eastern League, in Double A ball basically, and he's got some nice hitting stats and some pop in the bat and things. I need major like talent that can make an impact at the major league level in the next season or by the end of next. That's what I'm looking for right now, because Jackson Jobe should be up here, I would guess, next year at some point. Obviously, like Max Clark and McGonagall are probably a few years off yet, I would think. But you're probably not seeing them until 26, 27, somewhere in there. But if you're going to trade away Scoob, like there's a path with which you absolutely can, I think, rebuild this team with having signed Scoob and locking up Flaherty and maybe doing a little bit of free agency spending. Like, there's a path there, but I'm also convinced that there can be a path with the right trade for Scoobal. You can bolster your pitching in-house. You can absolutely do that. It's going to mean you're waving the white flag on this year, but you're already there. Let's be honest. You were already at the point where you're going to be doing that.
Yeah, six games out of the wild card spot, and the other teams don't seem to be slowing down, so...
No, they are not. And at that point, yeah, I'm fine if you throw the towel in on this year now, knowing what we know and knowing that Olsen's going to be gone for a while and the Flaherty's probably gone at the deadline. But if you're going to give away Scoobal, I need to know that if you're going to do something like that, that immediately kind of starts the clock, if you will, on Scott Harris and the rebuild. Because if you've now decided that we're making a big move like that that's going to have major impact now and in the next couple seasons, you're now going to be judged on the results of that. Like, no one's really judging that hard on the moves that haven't or haven't been made. Like, obviously, you know, we all wanted bats last offseason in free agency. I would have really liked me a JD Martinez, just putting that out there. I know, I've ranted about that to my heart, to a ridiculous extent over the last 6 months to a year. But this will be the thing that really starts the clock. That really, okay, now it's time to see can this guy actually really identify talent? Can he build you a minor league system with people who actually have the capability to hit major league pitching? And it's going to be really the first major test of the Scott Harris era here in Detroit. And you are absolutely going to be judged harshly, much as ultimately Al Avila was on the JV trade, which basically netted you nothing of consequence, and Jake Rogers, I guess. Like, that was at the point at which, all right, you've decided to hit the reset button. You've got your handprint on this thing now. It better work out for you, or the fan base is going to turn on you really quickly. And
oh, yeah.
And I think that's what this is going to be, what that represents, if it's done. That very much represents the start of, all right, your fingerprints are now clearly on this thing. You've made a big move, and you know, the rebuild is very much in your hands now. You're no longer just kind of a, I guess, passive observer to what Avila has assembled here, basically, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Clock starts now. Well, clock starts if this trade happens before the 30th, which I don't know if, do I think it's going to happen? I don't know if I see Scott Harris taking that big of a swing this early on.
I don't know. It'd have to be a really good deal, and I just don't see a whole lot coming our way. I mean, Scoble, he's doing well for us now. How much would you say that he is contributing to the recent Tiger success?
He's a big part of the reason why your team still, I'm not going to say in contention, because that's not really fair at this point.
Making the games interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I would. Unless it's a really good deal, basically, just to summarize what you said, unless it's a really good deal, hold on to him.
Right. Like, he's good for a 3.4 wins above replacement this season if you get into advanced sabermetric-like nonsense like that. Like, he's worth at least a good 3 wins above where this team would be without him. But we are just about up against it. It is happy hour at your local alternative Solid State Radio. It is happy hour, and I am kind of disappointed by one bit of news that has come out of this Red Wings offseason. Obviously, you've lost a fair number of contributors to last year's club.
Yeah.
I was really not thrilled about losing, well, Fabry, Perron, and
Perron, that one hurt, because I thought he really did what you asked him to do. And I don't know, he was getting that payday. He was getting that long extension that he wanted that Yzerman wasn't willing to give. So that one sucked. But then to see Daniel Sprong.
And we lost him for, like, nothing.
Peanuts.
Like, he got, what, $975,000?
Yep.
From Vancouver?
Yep, just under $1 million for one season. Here's a guy who scored just under 40 goals in the last two seasons. They're saying that a lot of people are steering away from him. Sources are saying this. People are steering away from him because saying that he's not the greatest teammate.
Really?
Nobody's really coming forward to say, okay, well, yeah, he, you know, tried to sleep with my mom or something like that. But, you know, nothing like that. But there's so many teams kind of leaned away from Daniel Sprong, which is odd because he was probably the one player that you and I could have agreed upon.
One of very few.
Yes. Really, really good guy on the ice. Seemed to do exactly what you wanted him to. But apparently behind the scenes, maybe he wasn't that easy to get along with.
I don't know. Like, until I see a report confirming or even from someone somewhat credible on that, I'm not willing to go that far.
It's a lot of hearsay. But it would also explain why all these teams are looking to improve, and he is a decent player, why Vancouver was able to, you know, a week, 2 weeks after the free agency opened up, they were able to scoop him up for a bottom barrel deal.
And he's a guy that, like, as of right now, probably pans out as a second line player on Vancouver.
Yeah, he was a healthy scratch a lot towards the end of the wing season, and I don't know why, because it seems like you could have used a player like him, but no, they would scratch him in place of Austin Czernik. I never bothered to learn his
Czernik.
Name. Czernik, yeah.
And he's apparently going back overseas to play in
Switzerland.
Switzerland, yeah.
Bern, yeah. Feel the Bern. So, yeah, they would keep him in the lineup, doing nothing, just being a pylon out there. And Sprong, who was contributing, was a healthy scratch. I mean, what's going on here?
It's hard to say. Like, he's got a lot. I don't know. Like, he's got a great shot. Like, a shot that's going to really just, it's going to shock you, Canucks fans, just the shots that that man actually makes.
Yep.
And he gets off at an incredible rate, you know, on top of that. Like, he's among the top 15 NHL forwards in 5-on-5 shot rate. And he's the only one of those top 15 that most of the league has never heard of.
Yeah, I don't get it. He seemed to be doing okay for Seattle, and they're like, no, we're good. And then Detroit had him to took him around the block for a year, and then said, nope, we're good. It's just something. Apparently, there's just a lot more than scoring goals in the NHL.
That there is. Like, he's a guy who when he is on the ice, like, he's very efficient with his game. He's a guy who can manufacture scoring opportunities for days and converts on them at a pretty solid rate for the kind of minutes that he typically plays.
Yes.
It's the kind of thing that you wonder if it gets overexposed that it becomes a more of a liability or anything, especially the way that, you know, you'd probably like to see him pass on a lot of those.
Right.
But, my, I would like to see, I look forward to seeing how he does with Vancouver. Like, honestly, I wonder if you put him on a line with Pettersson, which, you know, is one, I'm looking at the Athletics, like their projected lines for next year has Pettersson on the other, on, as the center of a line with Sprong, like that'd be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, not too bad. And they signed Philip Hronek to a real. Was it there that he signed a really long deal?
It sure was. Yeah. And they got Jake DeBrusk from the Bruins. Even better.
Yep, the Vancouver Canucks. Keep an eye on them.
And another former wing, Pugh Suter, is on their fourth line.
Oh yeah, I always liked Pugh Suter.
I did too. I never really wanted to get rid of him.
Nope.
But, you know, apparently it was decided that that needed to happen to accommodate some of the other, well, I'd say the other roster spots that, you know, the other guys who didn't have a roster spot or whatever. I don't know. I'm not.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting this season. I mean, we still got Kane. We got Kane back. We've got Tarasenko. I'm very interested to see how he's going to pan out. You still got DeBrincat. You got Larkin. Raymond, if he re-signs, I'm sure he's going to re-sign somehow. And Mo Sider, it's going to be a fun season. How it's going to pan out, it's anybody's guess because, I mean, you still have your big three in the Atlantic. You got Leafs, Bolts, and Bruins. Unless one of those three decide they don't want to play good hockey this year, and that maybe that's Leafs because like Marner looks like he's on borrowed time in Toronto. So maybe Detroit can sneak in there and get a legitimate playoff spot. But in the meantime, the Atlantic Division is going to be a tough one.
It always is. Like it's one of the harder, you know, probably the toughest division to play in this league.
Still a little surprised that they let the Tampa Bay Lightning let Steven Stamkos walk, and they bring out in Jake Guentzel basically for the same price. I think maybe there's some bad blood between Stammer and Tampa, maybe?
I don't think it's bad blood with Stammer and Tampa. You know, my thought on that is that that Guentzel, I mean, he's a younger player. He's arguably a better player at this point. He doesn't have all the injuries that Stamkos did.
This is true.
Like, there's a lot of legitimate reasons for them to, like, if you asked me to choose between Stamkos and Guentzel at this point in their careers, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I am 110% of the time taking Jake Guentzel.
Yeah.
Because Stamkos at this point, we talked about it, he, despite the fact that he has played nearly all the games the last three seasons, there was quite a few years in between where the injuries were kind of there. Yeah, he is on average close to a 40-goal score. He scored 40 goals two of the last few seasons. But he's on the way up. Like, Guentzel's a 30-goal, 47-assist guy last season. Like, he's now getting into really the prime of his career. And, like, you can't sign Stamkos. I don't think that kind of deal because you're going to end up regretting it by the time he's done. Like, Guentzel's only 29. He's been a 40-goal scorer as well. In fact, between the 21 and 23 seasons, he put up 40 points, or 40 goals, and 36 the year after that. He's got two 40-goal seasons, to his credit, for his career. Like, is he going to hit the heights of early Stamkos where he could go out and put 50 or 60 up in a season? No, probably not, honestly.
Nope.
As much as you'd love to see that, no, that's not going to happen. But even Stamkos wasn't able to sustain that. Like, his numbers, you know, dropped from there. Then he spent a bunch of time hurt. And, yeah, he's doing great again now, certainly. But how long do you really expect him to keep that up? You got a guy who's 4 years younger.
Yep.
Who plays at a very high level as well.
It makes sense.
And when he's healthy, he's, you know, one of the best scorers in the league. I honestly, I think they made the right call there. As much as you got to appreciate what Stammer did for the franchise.
Yep.
You've got to also kind of look at it realistically, like, well, how many great years has he got left?
Hopefully four. That's what he signed with the Preds.
And, well, you got to believe that there's a good chance that he does, but I imagine he probably wanted a longer term than that, and Tampa was not willing to give that to him.
No, clearly not. So now Nashville has really raised their game because, I mean, you've still got Roman Josi. You've got Yuri Saros. They've really bolstered up their team. I mean, could we see – wouldn't it be interesting to see a Tampa-Nashville Stanley Cup final?
I don't think that's going to happen, mostly because I don't think Tampa's getting to the finals.
No.
No, I think that's that is a team that they're running out of – honestly, that dynasty has come to an end, I think. Like, yeah, you still have
Vasilevsky, Hedman, Kucherov,
Braden Point, Braden Point left, didn't he?
Nope, Braden Point's still there.
For some reason, I thought I'm thinking somebody else then. Yep. But, like, the pieces are, they're not able to keep the whole band together anymore, and that's just, that's what happens when you have a team that, as it has for so long, that has stayed together. Like, something was going to have to give somewhere.
Yep.
And they already are having trouble making it even out of the first second round. And while, yes, Stamkos, certainly upgrade over, or at least, not upgrade, but at least on par with a Stamkos.
Right.
I don't know that you've done enough, nor that you really have the ability to do enough to upgrade the team from the team that got busted out of the playoffs in the first round last year. Like, all those years of trying to circumvent the cap, man, like, that comes back to burn you eventually.
Yep.
It always does.
Yep.
Like, you have Nashville, a literal seven.
Vegas, pay attention.
You have $730,000 of cap space left.
Woo, yay.
And you no longer can do the, well, we're just going to put Stamkos on IR until the playoffs. That sort of thing isn't going to do so hot for you now.
Yeah, that's true. That is a good point.
You got away with that for a long time, but you're no longer at the point where that sort of thing is necessarily a given. I don't think you're going to take a huge step back from where you were, but I don't see you having improved massively from where you were enough to get back to the finals.
Right.
Nashville? Maybe. I mean, looking at it right now, you've got to get past mostly. You've got to get past Dallas. They're like the team until proven otherwise in your division.
And I think Stamkos can help that.
He certainly can. Like, I think the Preds, I think, are a team that makes at least the second round of the playoffs next season.
Yeah.
In an Eastern or in a Western Conference final? I don't know. Depending on who you end up drawing, whether it ends up being Vegas, because I have no doubt that they're going to come back and do what they do. Vancouver obviously has made significant upgrades after winning their division last year, and you know, you expect Edmonton's going to at least be around again next year. I don't think Nashville gets out of the Western Conference Finals.
Well, we'll soon find out. You're probably right, because I mean, a lot of times people expect the Nashville Predators to do this, and then they just fall just short of it. But
the moves
they made this offseason, specifically Stamkos, raises an eyebrow or two, or three if you have three eyebrows. Or if you're a unibrow, raise one eyebrow.
Thank you for that, Adam. One more thing really quick while we're
sure.
Kind of in hockey mode here. Joe Valeno, 2-year deal.
With the contract worth like 4.25, something like that. Not bad. I'm glad. He's a nice blue-collar kind of guy on the team. I've always liked Joe Valeno, so I was happy to see that happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a raise. You know, from where he was, that, you know, well-deserved, certainly. But
he's a nice B-roll kind of player.
Yeah, that's really all you're expecting out of him. Like, he's a solid bottom-six guy.
Yep.
You're going to be fine with that. So you have three more restricted free agents to sign before the season starts.
Raymond Sider and whom?
Jonathan Berggren.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of people saying that he wasn't going to sign with us at all. And now he's still in the mix, so maybe he's changed his mind on that. I hope so, because I think there's going to be more of a chance for him to crack the lineup this season than it has been last couple of years.
Yeah.
You got Perron gone. You've got Sprong gone.
Yeah, there's room on the roster. Berggren, if now is the time, like, if you can't secure a spot on this roster coming out of training camp, if you don't open the season with the team, then you're never going to be a full-time guy on this club.
It's Johnny Berger time.
It is. Like, it's now or never. They've cleared all of the roster spaces and, quite frankly, have lost a lot of guys that I would have liked not to have lost.
Yep.
You have that spot now. You have no one to blame but yourself if you don't get that done. Now, that being said, the Wings have about $17.6 million with which to get Sider, Raymond, and Berggren done.
That's going to be a tough one because Sider, his agent's going to come up there and say, hey, listen, Calder Trophy winner, he's been consistent. We're wanting $5 million a year. And then you gotta pay Raymond, who he just exploded this season. You gotta pay him. He's looking at least $5 million a year.
Yeah, if they're only getting $5 million a year, you're doing all right. Because I mean that leaves you.
Yeah, they're not up. I don't think they're up to $7 million.
I don't know, man. I think they might be.
Sider, yes. Raymond, maybe.
I think it's very possible that those two guys are going to command somewhere in the neighborhood of $7 million each.
Yeah, then hopefully Johnny Berger time doesn't need a whole lot of ketchup.
Oh, I mean, how much
don't
can you really
a little cheese on him?
How much can you really justify asking for at that point? Because you're relatively unproven at the NHL level. It's not like you've come up and really just shown a whole lot of.
He'd probably take it at league minimum as long as it was a one-way contract. He's probably tired of buses. He's tired of GR. He just wants to be with the big club.
And it's hard to really blame him for that. Like, no. You have a combined in basically a season's worth of games, 17 goals, 17 assists for his career, a minus 15 for whatever that might be worth, you know, as an offensive player. Mm-hmm. And honestly, are those numbers to you the kind of numbers that would demand him paying him more than about $2-2.5 million a year?
How many goals? How many points? I mean, how many?
A total of 17 goals and 17 assists.
At the AHL level, right?
That's all in Detroit.
17 goals?
Yes, over the two seasons that he played here, because he played 67 games his first year, 12 his second year, so 79 games. So basically,
am I waking up from a coma? I don't remember him being here. Jonathan Berggren, I don't remember him being here that long.
He was here briefly last year, but he played a lot of games for this team in the 22-23 season.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, two-year deal.
If you can get him for under $3 million, well, I think you absolutely got to do it. But I don't think you can really, if you're him, you can justify asking much more than that. Like, you're not even a 2020 player. Like, you're not going to get quite the payday I think you're hoping for.
Yeah, shoot for the stars. Let Steve Yzerman bring you back down to earth.
And he will. I have no doubt in my mind that he will. And he has no problem. He has shown he has no problem telling anyone, oh, you think you're too good for us? You're too good to play here for whatever money I'm offering you? Yeah, go test free agency. Let me know how that works out for you. Let me know. Get back to me on that. We do have to hit a break, though. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. So Adam has apparently decided he just wants to bring in all of the get off my lawn out of me today.
Well, I mean, another story comes in where Gen Z is trying to cancel something that they find hostile and unsettling. They want to get rid of the thumbs up emoji.
Okay.
Hey, Sean, I'm going to be about 10 minutes late. Start the show without me. Make sure you have a beer ready for me when I get there. And you just send me the thumbs up.
And let me tell you, this is about how this show goes pretty much every day.
And,
that's not an exaggeration, folks.
I mean, it's a lot easier than typing out, yeah, okay, dude, just get here when you can, be safe, can't do a radio show without you, you're my favorite co-host. Just, you know, thumbs up is just so much easier, you know?
Right. And it's honestly, I would never say any of those other things, so that's, I guess, kind of stands to reason.
Okay, I'm reading this from Indie 100. Nothing seems to be safe from what Gen Z wants to cancel, change, or question, and a popular emoji can be added to the ever-growing list. For those not in Gen Z, the thumbs-up emoji is frequently used to agree with something, give approval, or even to mark that something has been read. But those in Gen Z seem to interpret it rather differently, with views ranging from unsettling, passive-aggressive,
unsettling,
and even hostile.
Unsettling? Yes. I'll give you hostile before I give you unsettling. Like, oh my God, you gave me a thumbs up. What does that mean?
That could mean anything. In a post that has since been deleted on Reddit, one user asked the question, am I not adult enough to be comfortable with the thumbs up emoji reaction? The user explained,
No, you're not an adult. Carry on.
I started an adult job, adult in quotations. I started an adult job where we use Microsoft Teams to connect with each other for work. Currently, there are a few emojis you can use to react to a message. Most people at work use a thumbs up emoji. I don't use it much. I either heart reactions or... First of all, you're in a professional place. Why are you using a heart emoji?
I see. Why are we reacting in emojis at work anyway,
yeah,
I guess?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we do, but also, like, most of us here at, well, on this side of the operation are all kind of friends outside of here, so we just do things like that, and
yeah.
I just do that to the good people at WMIC just to mess with them, mostly.
Yeah. Most people at work use thumbs-up emoji. I don't use emoji. Okay, yeah. Anyways, I think it's normal to thumbs-up messages, but I still feel it's such an unsettling response. Does anyone else feel this way?
No, it's just you.
And they got a lot of people talking in the comments, as you might have expected.
Apparently it wasn't just him.
No. For younger people, I'm 24 for reference, the thumbs up emoji is used to be really passive aggressive. It's super rude if someone just sends you a thumbs up. So I also had a weird time adjusting because my workplace is the same. So yeah, it's a generational communication culture difference. Everyone my age in the office doesn't do it, but the Gen X people always do it. Gen X people always do it. Took me a bit to adjust and get it out of my head that it means they're mad at me. I mean, I can guess, you know, you're like, hey, Sean, thanks for having me over at your place. I'm sorry about how I acted, how I upper decked your toilet and everything else, and I vomited on the cat and smashed your TV. Anyway, I just hope we can let it all get past this, and then you just give me the thumbs up emoji that I can get.
Yeah, you're if that's all you get from me, you're doing pretty well.
No, with you, just be like those three little dots that keep coming up. Like he's typing. He's still typing.
He's still typing. Oh my God. But he's probably going to fire me.
Yeah.
He's I'm never going to be invited to this man's house again. And you're right, and he hasn't been.
Wow, Home Depot delivers razor wire. I did not know this.
He's got a whole moat in his yard, like complete with an alligator and everything. Like, they're not even native to this region. Like, that's really that took some planning.
Yeah, had to put a saltwater tank in there. You know, don't want those gators to dry up on you.
Yeah, nobody wants that. That's not good for the gators, and it's just not good for the house.
We call that one bitey, that one snappy. They're pretty cool. They keep Adam out of the house, so, you know, they're doing their job.
Exactly.
But the thumbs up emoji, I mean, yeah, it's... I mean, I guess it's all in context. If you're saying, hey, I sent you those reports, let me know when you get them, and, you know, get a thumbs up emoji, fine, move on.
Yeah.
You know, if it's like, you know, he's talking to somebody he's trying to date. It's like, hey, you know, I just think you're a really nice person. I think you're interesting. I'd like to maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd rather have the thumbs up than just K or KK.
Yeah. That I can accept. I am at that point entirely fine with. I would rather have that than the K. Like, the thumbs up. It's so much, honestly, less passive-aggressive, truth be told.
Well, with Facebook Messenger, you can hold on to the thumbs up for a longer time, and it makes it bigger. So you can just give them a big old thumbs up. I mean, that's all right.
You've been known to do that.
Yeah.
A time or two.
Absolutely. There is a group chat that I'm with some bandmates of mine. We don't have a thumbs up. We have a middle finger.
That actually sounds very on brand for you.
Very much so.
I mean, I respond that way to most people too, but it's not just a preset setting or anything. I'm just usually
has
actively
to search for it.
I'm just actively feeling that way.
Ampersand, Octothorpe, star. There's a middle finger. Okay, yeah, I knew I could find it somewhere.
Yep, exactly. And cause, and honestly, usually you pretty much bring it on yourself. I don't feel that bad about it. I actually don't feel bad about it literally at all.
Yeah. So.
But no, I would rather I'll take the thumbs up all day over K. Like K is absolutely, because I have people in my life who may or may not be bandmates that do respond to a lot of things with K, and knowing them, I feel like it's not just being passive aggressive. Like they actually, or it's not just, you know, a generic response. Like they are actively being passive aggressive, except it's more of a more aggressive passive aggressive, really.
Aggressive passive aggressive.
I know people who are aggressively passive aggressive. You've been one of those.
Every once in a while, we all have our moments. But you know, if
I'm just like straight up aggressive usually. That's the difference.
I wish you'd be a little bit more passive.
Yeah, there's no passive with me. It's just straight up aggressive at all times.
If I'm texting somebody like two paragraphs, and you just come back with K, I'm like, oh, listen, I can be just as short as you, absolutely. But I mean, like we touched on it. Why are you using a professional communication? Why, first of all, why are you using a heart emoji? What kind
What
kind of animal are you? You know, next thing you know, the HR is going to be bringing you in here. Hey, what's with this hugs emoji? You realize that hugging people on the clock is against our policies.
Strongly frowned upon.
And what's this eggplant emoji? Can you explain the eggplant emoji to me for a second?
Yeah, I don't quite understand that one either.
And what is this 8008S? You gotta turn it upside down. Get out of here.
Get out of my office.
800085. I'm screwing up. Wait, you know what I'm talking about.
You don't even know
what I'm talking about.
You don't even know anymore, do you?
No. This generation has passed me by. I gotta go and tell some kids to get off my lawn.
Yeah, that's about right. That's on fairly on brand at this point.
Did you tell my kids to get off your lawn? Thumb emoji.
They're your kids. You don't tell your own kids to get off your lawn.
Get off your lawn, kids.
Get off your lawn. Yeah. I like it. No, like, already it's probably bad enough, yeah, in the course of, like, work stuff in a lot of places where that's, like I said, it's different if you're in a less formal setting.
Yeah.
Like, you know, any group of friends, or even if you don't work in as formal of a business as if you're not working in an office, like a corporate office of some sort, like if you just do what we do for a living.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a lot of that, and probably a lot of middle finger sent too.
Oh, sure.
But
sure. Yeah. Sean, business email regarding, listen up, Curse. Per my last email, in other words, do I gotta say this again? And yes, he does sign things per MGMT because he doesn't know how to spell management.
Look, that's a lot of letters. Okay, you know, I work in radio. You gotta cut me a little bit of slack here on the whole like reading and writing thing.
That's right.
Oh Lord, let's go ahead and we'll hit a break. We'll come back and close this thing out and tell you about some of the really fun stuff that we have planned for the rest of this week.
Yay!
We'll do that all coming up next. It is Happy Hour. Stick around. We'll be back right after this. Just kind of subjected you to this bit on Friday's show.
Sure.
But, you know, I've just been having so much fun getting to put the screws to you on the regular lately. That's where it'd be fun to bust out another exciting edition of This List is Trash.
Is this payback for the years I've subjected you to these lists?
Yep, except that you have not been as successful as I have at beating these things. Not without me spoon-feeding you the answers.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, here you last list was all about a bunch of TV shows. You probably have never seen one episode of any of those TV shows, and you're like, oh, come on, think about it, Adam.
There's a couple that I haven't seen, no. But today...
What do you got for me today?
The top 10 most toxic fandoms ranked by totally non-toxic people.
Sure. Those people exist.
Allegedly. And I'm only going to make you do top 10 because we don't have that much time left in the program.
All right. Well,
top 10 answers are on the board. And it's not all necessarily musicians, though there is a lot of that too.
Sure.
But some other various interests, some books, some TV shows, and kind of a lot of generalities, really.
Gotcha. Okay, well, let's get the pitchforks and torches going now. Trumpsters.
They do not make the list.
They're saying that Trump fans are not toxic, is not a toxic fan base.
I'm not saying they don't think that they're not a toxic fan base, but I haven't seen anything from the realm of the political in here.
Gotcha, okay.
And certainly not in the top 10.
How about Swifties?
Swifties come in at number 2.
Are they really that toxic?
Yes.
They just really love Taylor Swift. I mean,
literally, if you say that you... if you, like, even have the audacity to say, oh, I mean, their stuff's okay or whatever. Like, these people will dox you. They will find out where you live. They will find out everything you hold dear. They will try and get you fired from your job. They are insane people. These are not normal human beings.
Well, then, let me be the first person to say that Sean Cantwell on Solid State Radio thinks Taylor Swift sucks.
Yeah, I may not make it to the Eastern Michigan State Fair tomorrow. We might have a bunch of Swifties show up at my house tonight.
Just all of a sudden, before we break our broadcast, off in the distance, you just hear a bunch of clamoring. You're, shake it off, shake it off. Sean, run. I'll hold them off as far as I can.
And you, I don't think, can hold them off very far.